Tired of spending all evening looking for something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream, the new way to get Sky without a dish, where all your shows from all your apps and channels are in one place. Stream unmissable Sky exclusives like True Detective and The Regime starring Kate Winslet, and Netflix shows like The Gentlemen, all in one simple bill for just €25 a month for 12 months. Search Sky Stream today. New customers only. 12-month minimum term. Requires broadband. The regime available 8th of April. Further terms apply.
Here's what you just missed on the Indo Daily.
It is official. Simon Harris is the country's new Taoiseach and the youngest ever leader of this country.
When it comes to hate crimes, we see every couple of months there might be a shocking attack on a gay person, and then the conversation starts again. We need hate speech legislation. The other part of society says, well, this is an infringement of my freedom of speech. I'm not happy with it at all.
This is continually happening where developers are going through the correct processes, getting planning permission, and ending up stalled down the High Court.
Find and follow us at all the usual spots and over on the Irish Independent website. This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Can you say no? Like, if I'm Robert Ballacu and I'm thinking...
Don't even entertain it in your mind. You cannot. If you're asked to play, you play.
That's if it. Ireland's call ever comes, Will, you have to answer it.
You can't get out of it for a trip away to one of your exotic holidays.
Bloemfontein is exotic enough, to be fair, so that might tempt me. Initially, there was a kind of a backlash against the decision, then the backlash against the backlash, and now I think I'm coming around to a backlash against the backlash to the backlash. But what's your thought on it? Was it the right decision, in your opinion? Should he have made the decision?
Which backlash would you like me to comment on?
The rugby season is finally up and running, and we had an interesting weekend of URC action to kick things off. Tonight in the show, I will be joined by Luke Fitzgerald, as always, to chat about how the province has got on. Joaquin Tracy will also be here to discuss some of the major talking points from the last few days, including that very controversial call at the end of the Australia versus New Zealand game. Also, we want to hear from you, as always, so please tweet myself or Luke any question you would like answered during the course of the show. Or you could also send us a question to theleftwing@independent.ie email address, and we'll try to get to as many of them as we can during the season. But to start things off, I'd like to welcome Keane back to the show for yet another season. Keane, how are things?
All good, lads. Thanks for having me back. It's nice to talk to you from terra firma, not in New Zealand, where it was very difficult to get a Wi-Fi connection over there. So hopefully this is better.
I know, first world problems. You're only at the greatest tour Ireland have ever played, but I'm sure there was some teething problems along the way. But yeah, an interesting first weekend, plenty to sink our teeth into. One talking point that's come out from the weekend's action, Keane, that we'll start off with is Stuart McCluskey. A lot of people talking about him and his performance against Connacht for Ulster. That one-handed offload not only kind of broke open the Connacht defence, but the game as well. Ulster really kicked on and got an impressive victory. He has 6 Ireland caps over the course of his career. How many do you think he should have?
Well, I suppose the question is, why doesn't he have any more? And like, the simple answer is because he's had guys like Robbie Henshaw and Bundy Aki ahead of him. And like, those guys have been, you know, okay, they've had their injury problems, but by and large, one of them has been fit when the other one hasn't. And I think, you know, Irish rugby definitely loves like someone to kind of, you know, pin their hopes on a why isn't this guy in the squad. I think John Cooney was that for a long time. I think that's probably quieting down, and you can kind of feel the momentum building now for Stuart McCluskey. And look, there's no doubt that he's a quality player. I think he's definitely improved his game, I would say, over the last 2 years. I don't think he was quite hitting these kind of heights in the early part of his career, but I think when it comes to picking an Ireland squad, say, I think his lack of versatility maybe counts against him at times. Like, so I mentioned Robbie Henshaw there and Bundy Aki. They can both comfortably play 12 and 13. Obviously, we've even seen Robbie Henshaw go back at 15. Not that that ended up well. So I think Andy Farrell and Joe Schmidt was the same. Want players who can cover multiple positions, and Stuart McCluskey is predominantly a 12. Like, I don't think I've ever seen him playing 13. So I'm sure that doesn't help either. We don't know what he's like in around a squad environment, I would say. You know, this is 2 Ireland coaches in a row who haven't selected him. Joe Schmidt, and for a long time, I think people would have said, you know, his face just doesn't fit. He was too loose with his offloading. Again, that's just what, you know, playing devil's advocate with what they'd say, people would have said. But Andy Farrell has come in and almost encouraged more of kind of an offloading and expansive game, and he still hasn't really been selecting him. And even when we think back to the New Zealand tour, he was only a late call-up. He didn't make the squad at the first place. So I think it is. It's definitely disappointing from his point of view that he doesn't have more than six caps. And all things being equal, maybe he should have. But even on the New Zealand tour, okay, he played the second Maori game and he played well, but I don't think like he tore up any trees to the point where you were like, this guy really should be, you know, winning more caps. So, like I kind of said, I think Irish rugby loves, you know, kind of getting on the back of someone. Why isn't he getting more caps? But pure and simple, it's because he's had two world-class players ahead of him in the pecking order. And I think that's what it comes down to ultimately.
Yeah, and of those six caps, his only Six Nations appearance was his very first cap against England back in 2016. So his other game, five caps were against, I think, you know, Japan, USA, and maybe Georgia. Luke, you know, what's your read on Stuart McCluskey? Obviously, as Keane mentioned, when you're going up against Bundee Aki and Robbie Henshaw for, you know, a starting berth, it's going to be a tough battle. Yeah, so the reason I kind of brought it up is that he offers something, I think, quite different to the other players. His style is different. He, you know, he's a big guy. He does free his hands quite a lot. It does seem to be, as Keane mentioned, someone who on paper might fit into Andy Farrell's style that he wants to play, but hasn't really been brought in. What do you think?
Look, I'm actually a huge fan of his. And it's probably the only time you'll ever hear me say specialising actually isn't actually an advantage for him here, and it's probably cost him a lot of caps. I think Keane, you know, that's probably what Keane's feelings on the matter as well, is that obviously the two guys, you know, you can play Bundee and Henshaw together, and if one of them's out, generally, you know, even if Ringrose is out, then you can kind of play one of them as well. I think he probably, you know, at international level, there is certainly a step up. There's no doubt about that. And I don't think he can physically impose himself the same way that he can even in a Heineken Cup game, but, you know, less so there. I think definitely in, you know, rugby championship in the league over the course of his career, you know, he's really difficult to contain. You know, and in a Connacht side on the weekend that was underperforming, that defensively had had lots of issues for a long time, he looks great. But like any good defender, like that piece of play was a gorgeous piece of play for that Luke Marshall try. But any defender worth a salt, like I've played for a centre, like I'm not going to try and stop him getting his hands over the top of me. But what I'm going to do is if he opens himself up like that, I'm going to put a serious shot on him. You know, as an international player myself, I know like there's some guys, Sonny Bill Williams, like I'm not going to try and stop him offloading. Like I'm going to just smash him. So like he'll come across players that he can take advantage of at that level that he probably won't be able to do at international level. Now, what I will caveat all of that in saying is that he's got very few opportunities. I thought he was very harshly dealt with in that England match. You know, he's definitely a player, I think, that could have picked up all of these things and become a better player by playing in the national team. So look, he's been a bit unlucky, I think, with the competition. And I do think that he was a bit unlucky with maybe how he fit into Joe Schmidt's plans. I look, and just on the personality side of things, he's a great guy to have in the trenches. He's a nice lad too. So it's not a clash of personalities per se. It would have only probably been based on views on his game and where he fit in. Would be my own opinion on that. Whereas I think the likes of a John Cooney, that was the example that was used. John maybe had a bit of a clash of personalities with the coaches. I don't think it was more, I actually think it was less to do with John's game than actually, you know, him being maybe a little bit confrontational, maybe being out in the media a bit more. You've never had that issue with the likes of McCluskey, I don't think.
I think one of the things as well that might work in his favour, Will, is the fact that if you look over at Irish rugby over the last 18 months, and if you look at combinations, himself and James Hume's centre partnership has been absolutely outstanding. It's been one of the key reasons, I think, why Ulster have enjoyed such a brilliant period, really. Obviously, they're still kind of waiting for that trophy to kind of, you know, mark the impressive strides that they've made. But himself and James Hume have been outstanding together. And the fact that, like, Hume is obviously still out injured with that injury he picked up in the first Maori game in New Zealand. But Luke Marshall comes back in and you didn't really miss Hume. Like, he was outstanding as well. And I think that said a lot about Stuart McCluskey, that both 13s could just fit in and play off him. So you never know. Like, he's still young enough, like, in terms of, you know, forcing his way back in. And I think the fact that Ulster now are playing far, far better rugby, their attack is so much more in tune with each other than what it was a couple of years ago. One of the most exciting backlines when everyone's fit and firing, you'd say, around. So I wouldn't say the door is fully closed on Stuart McCluskey at all just yet. And the fact, like I said, that he got a call up to New Zealand shows that he's not that far away in terms of Andy Farrell's radar.
Yeah, it was funny to see Luke Marshall playing so well on Saturday. Like, he's been around for so long. He was involved in Declan Kidney's last Six Nations campaign in 2013. And obviously, he's had injury issues and concussion issues. But when he's playing well, he's a very good player. And just on McCluskey, two things. The one, I know he's predominantly a 12. Chris Farrell's predominantly a 13. But given the versatility of some of the other centres, you could definitely say that, like, Farrell has 15 caps and has played in World Cups and much more Six Nations games. McCluskey's played one Six Nations game. I think McCluskey is a better player than Farrell and has proven longer and been better. Could you have maybe shoehorned in him to 12 and maybe moved one of the guys to 13 in some of those games potentially? I know it depends on form.
They're kind of slightly different players though, Will. Like, I would say McCluskey's really come on in terms of his pre-contact work. Like, his passing, the passing pre-contact is still the barometer for a great centre, in my opinion. You have to be able to do that. I think he's really come on there. I think he's always had an edge over Farrell in the offloading stakes, but I don't think he has always had, like, Farrell actually is a nice passing game. It's kind of underrated, and I think that's maybe why he's shone a little bit more with Joe Schmidt versus McCluskey, I think. And probably why he got more opportunities there. But it's a good point because they're both very similar, both big guys, both very physical. And I actually really like both players. Maybe it's because I just like having someone in there to look after your 10. But both have kind of suffered a little bit with injuries, haven't they, from time to time. I was hoping to see a bit more of from Farrell. I thought he might kick on and put a bit more pressure. But just in terms of the Ireland boot. And I thought he'd be a real asset for Munster. But you know, both guys, remember, I don't think have been playing behind packs that have been really dominating other teams as well. Like, yeah, you do have to remember that. And that's probably why Bundy Aki's form is so, it really what makes him stand out is that his Connacht pack isn't always going forward. Yes, they play nice attacking rugby, but I still don't think they dominate. Like, versus Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose, like, that Leinster pack can really dominate a team and are always looking like they're going forward. So they always have that advantage on a week-to-week basis. So we probably have to keep that in mind to a certain extent as well. Like, I think why we're seeing a little bit more of the likes of McCluskey and Hume is because Ulster's pack has really improved. I think it's really improved. I think they've made some... They're still... The front row, you know, still a little bit to go in my mind, but I think I see some young guys there coming through. But I think they've got a few more carriers in that over the last couple of years. And I think that's why you see McCluskey coming to the fore a little bit more. And that's why we've seen... Look, Hume is a great talent, but... I still think that's what allows those guys to play a little bit better. Just a thought on that, Will.
Yeah, last thing on McCluskey is I'm looking forward to 2 weeks' time, Ulster versus Leinster and Ravenhill. And I think on a Friday night, that'll be a good battle if it's maybe McCluskey versus Robbie Henshaw ahead of a November squad being announced in a couple of weeks' time. But just on that Ulster-Connacht game, generally, Keane, you know, I mentioned at the start, it was an impressive win for Ulster. Very disappointing from Connacht, and they face into an absolutely murderous fixture list. Two games in South Africa, and then Leinster and Munster at home. It could easily be 0-5 to start the season. What were your thoughts from the weekend?
Yeah, it wasn't great, was it? I think of all the four provinces, I think Ulster were the most impressive. They looked like they kind of just built on what they had done last season. And I know we'll get on to Leinster and Connacht, but they still looked like they were, or sorry, Leinster and Munster, but they still looked like they were stuck in very much pre-season mode. And in terms of Connacht, yeah, their issues last year, like we're blue in the face on this podcast from talking about it, was their defense. And to me, it was just as poor as it had been last season. And I think that's really worrying for a first game of the season when, you know, Pete Wilkins has obviously taken over as head coach and Andy Farrell has moved up to be director of rugby. And Pete Wilkins has taken on the defense. And I think Colly Tucker was looking after it last season. So they've kind of went back to, you know, what they knew, a different kind of system again. But when you think of how much work they must have done over the summer on the defence, and for it to be that poor, I think was alarming, really, to be honest. I know Ulster were pretty good, but it was their first hit out of the season as well, and they looked like they'd been playing together for months. So, yeah, you mentioned the tough opening that Connacht have, Will, and it's in real danger. Like, I'm very reluctant to make like sweeping judgments after one game of the season for any of the four provinces that we're going to talk about, but when you look at the schedule alone that Connacht are facing, there's a real danger that they're going to be cut adrift after the first few rounds, which is really not what they need after a tough season last year. Their discipline was atrocious. I think they conceded 15 penalties, which is just really, really poor at this level. 15 penalties, 20 missed tackles, another 5 tries conceded. That is not what you want. So going away, I was on the Connacht press conference call yesterday with Pete Wilkins and Tom Daly. And, you know, of course, like, they're going to give the glass half full approach that they're going to wait South Africa. It's a good time to to bond. But like, I know the Stormers and the Bulls are going to be missing their most of their Springbok players who are obviously in the playing in the Rugby Championship. But God, you don't want to be going to South Africa to the home of the champions to try and get your season back on track early on. But on the flip side, if Connacht were able to pull off a result, it would give them a massive boost going into what's still going to be a tough run with the Bulls to come next week. I think they showed late on, albeit the game was well dead and buried, what we know they're capable of. They scored a really, really good try through Caelan Blade. Brilliant play by Alex Wooten and David Hawkshaw. But I mean, it's too little too late. We know Connacht are well capable of turning it on like that, but they've got to get the nuts and the bolts right. And I just think that the fact that they've been working throughout pre-season on one of the glaring issues for it to be that poor again, I don't think bodes well for what's to come down the track.
And also they lost, they just lost moment after moment. That was very, very controllable. Like, I can see why they take a glass half full approach, but the problem for them is that it's been a consistent issue. You know, whether it's giving away a silly penalty at a moment where there's no need, like 40 yards from your own goal line, you know, whether it was making a turnover and then a sloppy kick that didn't go out, they just pile pressure on themselves consistently throughout the game. And I think what's very worrying for me is that, as you say, Keane, they would have, surely anyone coming into that setup would say, okay, well, what are two things that we can really fix that'll make a big difference to us next season? And if you looked at the two glaring stats, it was the amount of missed tackles last season, and the amount of tries conceded, but also the amount of yellow cards and red. Like, they were in the bottom four in the league, I think, bottom three in the league in yellow and reds combined. Like, there are two things that you could fix straight away, and you'd have to imagine, like, because those stats were so glaring, that, you know, they would have spent a huge amount of time focusing on that during the preseason. Now, of course, you want to have the ball more as well, so you do have to focus on the attack. But you know, at some point, you know, because you do, look, if you have less of the ball, you are going to be there's going to be more pressure on you, and look, there's a chance you're going to, you know, miss more tackles and concede more penalties. I get that point. And you don't want to neglect your attack, but there are two things. I think it has to be at a certain level, and to my mind, they're not even at a baseline level at the start of the season. And those two things, because they went in at half time, and you know, bar a couple of silly mistakes at the end of the game, that game could have been really close at half time, and it could have been a nail biter up in Kingspan. Put it, you know, home fans maybe getting on Ulster's back, you know, with, you know, if they survived another 15 or 20 minutes into the second half. So I'd be really disappointed with that, and I would share Keane's concerns around, you know, how, you know, that bad start that they had and all those bad moments that they had throughout the game. The flip side and the glass half full approach is that there's lots of controllables there, but they knew that coming into that game.
One, not silver lining, but boost is that going over to South Africa, some of their big names are back in the squad. Mac Hansen, Bundiaki, and a few others. Albeit they will lose Caelan Blade and they will lose Keane Prendergast at some point during that South African tour when they go off with Emerging Ireland, Keane, which brings me on to Emerging Ireland yet again. I know we covered it in fairly detailed the fashion last week with Rudd, but that was before the squad was announced, so we know we have a clearer picture now about what the next few weeks might look like. You know, having seen the squad now, what are your overall thoughts? Like, we were chatting off air that, like, from an Ulster perspective, I mentioned that mouth-watering early season fixture against Leinster. Robert Balakoon is going to be gone from that. Nathan Doak is going to be gone from that. Tom Stewart, who was so impressive at the weekend, the young hooker who's played 20s the last few years for Ireland, he'll be gone from that as well. I'm not surprised Dan McFarlane isn't happy with it, but what's your take on that specific piece maybe, or just generally that you've seen the squad?
Yeah, well, from obviously Ulster haven't been shy in publicly saying how they feel, but I believe privately they're absolutely raging. All the provinces are unhappy, but I think Ulster out of all four are really, really pissed off. I was just chatting to you about it, Will. Like, I mean, they've two wingers gone, like Robert Balakoon and Ethan McElroy, who's, you know, back fit this week. So you'd imagine he would have been involved, and he's been brilliant over the last couple of years as well. And for them to also lose two scrum halves, I think is a real kick in the teeth. Nathan Doak and obviously Michael McDonald, who's come back from Australia. So you can really understand why Tam McFarlane and the coaches would be annoyed. And even if we look at like the Munster situation, I think I'm right in saying that Munster are losing 10 players and all 10 featured in last week's game against Cardiff. So like that is an unmerciful whack that you have to take to your squad depth, to your training numbers. You're going to be calling on academy lads. So it's going to be really tough. Now, all the provinces have their Ireland internationals back this week. I don't. And that was part of the agreement that the IRFU had with them, that, okay, we're going to be taking 35 lads here, but you know, the internationals are going to be available. But like, you're not going to see, well, I'd be very surprised if you see Johnny Sexton, maybe even Robbie Henshaw, those kind of guys feature this weekend. I think you'll see guys more on the fringes coming back, because in a World Cup year, these guys' minutes are going to be have to be managed more than ever. But like, on a whole, like, as a rugby, you know, like, you know, journalist, supporter, whatever, from the outside looking in, I'm really excited to see how this tour goes. I can understand the gripes. I can understand the frustrations. I without a doubt, I can see that the players would be getting more game, or better. They'd be playing against better quality opposition in the URC. But I think it's more about how they get on behind the scenes. You know, they want to see them within the squad environment. And I think there are a few guys here who have definite claims that they can make a World Cup squad this time next year. And that's ultimately what it's...
Who do you think? Because like, looking at that squad, I think there's very few players other than like Robert Balakoon, who, like, what he's doing there when he should be starting for Ulster against Leinster, I don't know. But besides him, there's no one, maybe a Frawley as well, who
Frawley,
seems to me is almost being like a kind of a shot to Leinster, saying, if you're not picking him, we're taking him.
When Frawley came on last week, he came on in the centre again. Like, it just seems to be they're a bit at loggerheads. Maybe I wouldn't be surprised if Nathan Doak makes a late push, to be honest. I've been so impressed with him over the last couple of years. He could, like, depending on, you know, he could put pressure on Craig Casey for that second spot. Even Conor Murray, you never know. I think a guy like Kean Prendergast, I know he was a little over eager, I would say, at times in New Zealand, but he's got the frame, he's got the athletic profile, could be a bolter. I really like the look of Alex Kendellan. So you never know. I think by and large, Andy Farrell knows what his squad will be for France next year. But I do think there are a couple of openings. And look, Ireland have never tried this before. They've come up short in World Cup quarterfinals before, so how much of a bearing it will have on that, we'll wait and see. But I'm looking forward to seeing, I think maybe it's because I always enjoy covering the 20s, that maybe I'm just looking forward to seeing how these guys step up. And you know, I think in New Zealand, I know there's only a few of the lads who were playing in the Maori game, but I thought one of the things that got glossed over a little bit was obviously winning the series was unbelievable, but I thought the level of improvement from the first Maori game to the second Maori game was really, really impressive. And it was really encouraging as well, because it not only kind of showed you that the players were stepping up, but also they were taking on the messages that the coaches were giving. So I can see both sides of it. I know you're not, from talking to you, Will, you're not a big fan of it, but and I can understand both points of view. But I mean, it's three extra games to look forward to, and I'm looking forward to watching them, to be honest.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to watching them for sure, but it's just in my head, it's kind of, now that I've seen the squad, my thought process is kind of like, the tour makes sense if you pick players like Balakoon. From an Ireland point of view, I don't really see how it makes sense to pick players who are like really on the fringes of the provinces, who barely even play for them. I don't see, for this World Cup cycle, how that really benefits it that much. Luke, what's your take on it, that we've actually seen the squad?
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Will. And I think there's a bit of an out given the quality of the opposition as well. So I think if they win, I think we'll question, you know, how good the opposition is, and was there any benefit there? Did we really learn anything from them in the white heat? Like, it's very different to like a Maori game. You know, you know that that's pretty high quality opposition, very close to probably better than lots of international teams, but certainly close to them anyway. Maybe not in this New Zealand's current form, but you know, historically, you know, there's some quality players there. So I think you learned a lot about people in that one. These ones, I just don't get it. And I think there's a few people that would really benefit from actually playing and staying in the provinces. My opinion has always been that your provincial form is what gives you the platform to go ahead and make the Irish team. And I think, you know, playing in an Interpro would have been far more beneficial for some of these players than going down to South Africa. So to play kind of play in a scratch team against kind of scratch oppositions? I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And then even to have like Andy Farrell not even coaching the team, that's like another oddity to me.
And the explanation, you know, that Simon Easterby gave as well, Keane, I read it in your piece, that it was like, we have 35 players at us and he's going to monitor the 35 guys back home. What does that mean? Going to Ravenhill to watch Ulster Leinster? Like, it sounds like he'll be training.
He's on a video. Like, oh, fuck, yeah. That's bizarre to me.
Like, what's your read on that, Keane? Like, what's actually, like, I know you were there when it was being said. When I read it, I thought it was just, what does that even mean? Like, what's he going to be doing that week?
Yeah, like he touched on that he'd be putting plans together, you know, for the November series. And even, you know, he mentioned next year's World Cup that there's planning put forward. But I totally agree with what you're saying in terms of like, if it's that important, would you not have the head coach there? My understanding is that the squad will go into camp on Friday, and they'll have a 3-day camp Friday, Saturday and Sunday before flying out South Africa and into Bloemfontein. I think they'll arrive on Tuesday. But Andy Farrell is going to be heavily involved in the camp this weekend in terms of running things, in terms of setting up the sessions. But then he won't be in South Africa. So it's very strange. Sure.
Why not have the continuity? Why would he be setting all the sessions and then not
going exactly. Why is he so heavily involved in the build-up and then he's going to be like, lads, I'm leaving now.
You're on your own now.
Yeah,
figure it out. Canoe in South Africa, lads.
The only thing I can think of is it like a succession kind of planning thing from a coaching perspective?
Well, there's definitely a huge element of that, and that's what the IRFU will tell you, that they want the coaches to broaden their horizons, but as much as the players. But I don't know.
Why take a Frawley then? Why take a Frawley? Like, if I was Frawley, I'd be fuming going on this. Fuming. Well,
I think Will probably hit the nail on the head there. I think Ireland are taking him because they're going, we can guarantee that he will probably start, we'll say, 2 of the 3 games at 10, and he will get minutes at 10. Leinster are not playing him at 10. Leinster see him still as a ball playing 12. And I know, like, I heard of players who were, we'll say, on the cusp of making this, who were almost turning their phones off around the time the squad was being picked. They didn't.
I was thinking that, actually, like, can you say no? Like, if I'm Robert Ballacoon, I'm thinking...
Don't even entertain it in your mind. You cannot. If you're asked to play, you play.
That's if Ireland's call ever comes, Will, you have to answer it.
Yeah.
Nice.
You can't get out of it for a trip away to one of your exotic holidays.
Bloemfontein is exotic enough, to be fair, so that might tempt me.
But there are guys we're thinking the exact same thing. Like, I am far better off staying here, playing in these interpros, getting URC minutes, than going off to games that aren't going to be on TV. Okay, the senior Ireland coaches will be there. Andy Farrell will be there. My understanding is that it's going to be shown on a stream. Will you have many people in the stadium watching it? I don't know. So I can understand why people were keeping their heads down and wanted to stay with their provinces. But again, you never know. If you got like a Tom Stewart plays well in the games, could he come back and be a bolter? I don't know.
He won't get in the Ulster team, so no.
Like, that's the problem. Pressure on Rob Herring
Yeah, hopefully Andy Farrell has time to watch it on the stream, because I know he'll be busy that week. So maybe if he gets a few minutes of his busy, he's planning so much for the World Cup, he might get a moment.
This is getting like, this is even more like of a circus than I thought. It's not even televised.
Jesus. It's been televised in South Africa, and I think the plan is that it will be shown on a stream on YouTube here, I think is the plan.
God almighty. The glamour of professional rugby. We'll check back in with this.
It's a real gloomy podcast, isn't it? Sorry, pick it up, Will. Come on, let's get happy about something.
I was going to move on to Munster. I don't know whether that makes it more or less gloomy. Luke, so, you know, they lost, obviously, their first game of the season against Cardiff. How long is it realistic to wait until you start seeing these green shoots, these improvements that maybe, say, a Mike Prendergast is bringing in? I was interested in listening to Bernard Jackman against the head. He's saying January is when you might start seeing this kind of improvement. From your own experience, when a new coach comes in, you know, how quickly is it feasible for us to be seeing a marked improvement, do you think?
It took Cheka a while. I'm only going to speak to my own experiences. Took Joe Schmidt 5 or 6 games, if you remember. There was people calling for his head. So, I would expect them to actually pick it up a bit sooner than that. I think there's still a good nucleus of players there that are experienced, that are good rugby players. Like, the fundamentals of rugby don't change. And I think they should still expect to be very good at that and be a hard team to beat. I think coming up, you know, against the likes of the better teams in the competition, you know, with a more, what would you say, established coaching staff, more established ideas, you know, that might be a bit of a stretch for certainly the first half of the season, the first third of the season. So maybe Jackman's right on that one. You know, he'd probably have a good sense of that as a coach. Look, I still expect better things from them. The one thing I would say is that I'd like to probably, you'd always like to give a coach a bit more time to I think, get some recruits in as well to kind of, you know, to get a few bodies that maybe fit the game plan a bit more. I think I'm thinking around Trade, I'm thinking that front row, like there's a few moving parts there this year that, you know, we'll take a bit of time to bed in. I think that's probably the big risk for Munster. I don't know what Keane thinks of that. I don't know what you think of that, Will. I think that's the big risk factor for them. You know, you'd hope they get a few bodies back. You know, that'll make a big difference for them. I'm thinking of Snyman there is you know, a big addition. Can Ahern, you know, in the row as well, can he make a big impact there? You know, that'll release Byrne into the back row, and all of a sudden that's a pretty formidable looking back five in that Munster pack. You know, Fekitoa, like, you know, how does he fit in? Can he take them to a new level? Can Carberry stay fit for a season, or do they go at one of the young guns? So there's loads of questions I still think to ask about this Munster team. And I still think that, you know, you probably need to give a guy a bit more time to, I don't know, get the squad looking a bit more like, you know, he'd like it, you know, put his own imprint on it. I think one, I'm going to use soccer lingo, but like your transfer window, you'd probably like to give him one more, Will, you know, before you really start judging him too harshly. So that'll probably be my opinion on that. You know, of course, like a loss, it is a miserable way to start things. But, you know, you can't be too harsh too soon. You know, we look at Joe Schmidt and how great he was in the end. So, you know, we should hold Stumm for a little bit and give him a little bit more time, I think.
Yeah, and they have the Dragons this Sunday, which is, you know, a nice bounce back fixture. They were very poor in the opening game against Edinburgh, and Dean Ryan, their coach, gave them a fairly good shoeing in the media. Keane, you know, what's your view on it? I know you were writing about maybe, you know, one or two potential green shoots, as well as the tough, you know, moments as well. Like defensively, they conceded 3 tries towards the end of last season against both Toulouse and then Ulster in that URC quarter final. They conceded heavily as well. Dennis Leamy has his work cut out in that regard, maybe as much as Mike Prendergast in some respects. Like, what are you hoping to see over the next couple of weeks in terms of improvements?
I was surprised with the lack of urgency, I think, particularly around the breakdown. I mean, that's just kind of like your nuts and bolts, your dirty work that's a prerequisite, you know. I just thought like players would be much more eager to make an impression on the new coaching staff first game out. And that's their small fixes, I think. I'd agree with Luke. I wouldn't be overly critical after one game. And I do think I'd probably agree with Bernard Jackman that it's going to be, I think, a few months before we probably see this. And I don't think that's a slight on the coaching staff or the players, but the habits, and Mike Prendergast touched on this when he was talking to us a couple of weeks ago. It takes a while to change people's habits. And it's a line that's really stuck out for me, because like Munster have been so kind of drilled into playing this South African way under Razzie Rasmus and then Johan van Graan. And it's going to take time, I think, for that mentality around the place to change. Like from what I hear, and I truly believe that this isn't kind of hearsay that, you know, that you kind of get when every new coach comes in. But I believe the training has been really, really good. It reminds me a bit of when Andy Farrell, I think, took over as Joe Schmidt. The pressure valve has been released a little bit. I've heard the word chaos being mentioned at training, which is kind of gas when you think about it, because like how long has Stuart Lancaster been, you know, comfortable in chaos theory? But the reality is Munster are playing catch up here, and the trends have kind of moved on, but they never moved with it. They were still kind of playing the South African style of play that clearly didn't suit them. So I think it will take time. There were a couple of moments in the game, not a huge amount. I mean, in the piece I was talking about, you were talking about, Will, on Monday, I kind of, you know, I thought Keenan Knox did a lot of good things in the game. I mean, he's, you know, his primary job will be to lock down the scrum, and a lot is expected of him. But I thought it was encouraging to see him get on the ball in midfield. It's clearly, you know, the way the game has gone. We look at Tadhg Furlong, how comfortably he is at doing it. And he does it almost second nature with Johnny Sexton running off his shoulder. And there was a moment in the game where, you know, Ben Healy ran a nice line and Fekitoa makes a break. And you're just like, okay, maybe this is a bit of what they're trying to do. And I think the thing about it is, like, Mike Prendergast will empower the players, I think, to play rugby. We started this conversation talking about Stuart McCloskey in terms of encouraging offloads. And it's not about playing mad kind of, you know, kamikaze rugby, but there's definitely going to be a more of an openness to it. And I think Munster fans will hate the idea, I think, of another period of transition. But if you call a spade a spade, this is what it is. And if they want to get back to where they should be and how they should be playing. It's going to take time and it's going to require patience, but I think they've got a good coaching staff on board. Even Andy Kiriakou, the new forwards coach, was up doing media today, and like, he's probably the unknown quantity in the group with Leamy, Prendergast and Rowntree, and I thought he spoke quite well as well. He's not a guy who I would have spoken to much, particularly since he's come back. I know he used to play for Munster back in the day. He had a season there. But it's going to take time. I mean, there's a lot of new ideas in the pot, you know. Obviously, there's continuity from Rowntree from last season. But trying to pick the scraps of positives that were there in the previous era and building them forward, I think is going to be a bit of a challenge because, like, they're really changing. They're struggling. They're not searching for their identity is what I would say. I think Munster have lost that over the last couple of years, but I think with the people that Rowntree has assembled, I think he's got the right people on board. And the thing about it is, the academy is producing really good players again. And I think, like, particularly in the back line, there's plenty of quality there. And guys who, like, you think of, like, someone like Simon Zeebo, Antoine Frisch has come in, and, you know, by all accounts, he's going to be a bit of a wild card as well. So, The problem for Munster will be this season, and Luke has hit the nail on the head. Can their front five get them front football? And without Snyman in that pack, I still think they have the concerns of old. I don't think we can expect, you know, Keenan Knox to come in and all of a sudden be like Tadhg Furlong. And to me, when it comes to the business end of the season in particular against the bigger teams, I still think they look a little bit light. So that's not going to change. They can't just sign someone. I think they were in the market for, you know, a tight head. I still think they're a little bit light at hooker. Josh Witcherly at loose head, I think, is an exciting prospect. But similar problems of old. But maybe if they can change, like, the mentality or something around it, they can get more out of the players that they have. Because, like I said, I think there is plenty of quality in the squad.
It's not a front five player, but someone who really stood out to me, I thought was really good at the weekend, was Paddy Patterson at scrum half. I thought he had a really good game. Thought his passing looked good, had a few snipes. His option taking as well, about which player to hit, I was really impressed with. So even though there's Conor Murray and Craig Casey there, I will be interested to see if he can kick on over the next couple of weeks. From a Leinster perspective, Luke, they started with a win, but it was a bizarre game. They were 21-0 up against Ebre, ended up conceding 5 tries. You know, defensively, you know, there was some back three kind of mix-ups through the centre as well at one stage. I think Charlie Nattoy in his debut maybe got turned around for one of the tries. What did you make of it? Because, like, you don't really associate that sort of performance with Leinster traditionally. They had a pretty strong team out. I know obviously the frontliners weren't playing, but some real quality there as well.
Yeah, it looked like, to my mind, a real start of the season type performance. You know, you come out of the gate, Sebre looked a bit all over the place, and Leinster took advantage of that. And then just couldn't really kick on, you know. I think that was what I took from that. And look, you have to give credit to Sebre. Like, I mean, I've had a few fixtures down there that have been pretty tricky as well. So look, it was credit where it's due. But look, I think Leinster will be disappointed with it. As you say, you know, they've got to be defensively a little bit stingier. And I think if they think back on their season, last couple of seasons, really, defensively, actually, they kind of cost them on the big occasions. Like, if you think of the La Rochelle game, they were quite leaky against them. I mean, you think of the was a rule, sorry, the yeah, winger, I mean, rule. Yeah. Like, that was really poor. They were numbered up really well there. You know, kind of a similar enough type offload to actually the McCluskey one. It was terrible defense actually out wide. And then you know, even for Keenan not to tackle him going through, like, I think defensively, probably for Leinster, it's actually not going to be an attack thing. That I think their attack is very, very solid, and isn't, you know, going to be a reason to stop them winning something. But I think their defense could be, actually. And I think, you know, they need to be one of those teams that's just stingy every single game. And I think they've got the potential to do that, provided they're mentally right. And look, you need to be mentally right for the whole game. So that's, I think, what they'll be probably looking at and thinking. Well, sorry, if I was a Leinster coach, that's what I'd be, you know, exactly thinking about. It's like, you know, if that defense is stingy as it should be, given the personnel that they have and the pack that they have, you know, that's where they become like a really difficult proposition for any team in Europe. And that's what takes them, I think, to a European Cup. And I think that's the aim for Leinster. They're fairly open about that. And to my mind, that's the next frontier for them, is to get back to being that team that's really hard to break down. And, you know, games like that on the weekend, it is the start of the season and there's a few new bodies in there. But they're the ones that you got to be nilling teams. They're that much better than Zebre, even without their frontliners, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, they only beat Zebre by 3 points last year and four this year. So technically, that's a 33-1, 30% improvement. That's what you can take. You can take that to the boardroom and show off your impressive numbers. But Keane, all jokes aside, like anything stood out to you or anything of interest, as Luke mentioned, it's game number one. It is Zebre. It's some players who probably won't be featuring in some of the bigger games, but you know we do expect higher standards from Leinster all the same.
Yeah, that is probably the big thing that I took away from it. And I definitely made this point several times with you guys before. The Leinster squad is so competitive that whenever you get a chance, it doesn't matter if it's the first game of the season, you've got to take it. And for me, I don't know, I feel like there's a couple of guys in the squad who I've seen a bits and pieces of, and they don't, to me, they look short on the standards that Leinster require. And again, like similar enough to Munster, I was a bit surprised that they weren't kind of more, you know, didn't show more urgency. I was surprised that more the kind of the younger Leinster guys weren't a bit sharper, a bit hungrier, you know, because the more the internationals are going to be back, like I said, this weekend. And, you know, once it gets into the meat of the season, your opportunities are going to be limited. And you don't want to be kind of thinking, okay, well, when November, or even there's no games on in November this time, I know, but you don't want to be relying on just when the internationals are away that this is where you're going to pick up your game time. You've got to expect more of yourself and, I think, drive your standards. And to concede, I think they conceded two tries at first phase to Zebre, which is really, really disappointing, no matter if it's the first game of the season or if it's the last game of the season. So I think they'll be concerned by that. But again, like, I mean, they've so much scope and room for improvement. I think the biggest thing for Leinster this season is losing the semi-final to La Rochelle a couple of years ago was obviously massive for them. They went away, they kind of went back to drawing board. Okay, like, let's, you know, think outside the box. How can we beat a team like La Rochelle? And then they play La Rochelle in the final last year. And okay, like, it was a really close game, but they still came up short. So I would wonder, will that have an even bigger impact? And it's interesting to see Declan Darcy has come in on board this year. You know, they're clearly trying to think outside the box to do something different, because I certainly believed coming into the Champions Cup final last year that Leinster were in a better place. I know, like, the semi-final was played behind closed doors. It was a really weird game. They were missing a couple of players, but I felt they were primed. You know, it seemed like their time to go on and win it, and they didn't. And I think that will have hurt. Well, it clearly hurt them massively, because they ended up, you know, the season fizzled out and they lost to the Bulls at home as well. So what is it, the first season since 2017? I think that they're coming into season without a trophy, and it's something actually we were chatting to Jack Conan about today, and he was kind of saying the last time that happened, the following season they went on and won the double in 2018. So that's obviously what they have their sights set on this season. There's no doubt that they're capable of it, but as we've seen last year, the South Africans have just made it so much tougher to win. So I think it's a good thing, though. I think, you know, no one is resting on their laurels. You know, Jack Conan speaking about the fact that, you know, motivation levels have never been as high in Leinster. You know, he mentioned like words like despair, you know, all this kind of stuff. So that would really kick them on. But can, you know, like you touched on, well, being 21-0 up and conceding off first phase to a Zebre team, I think that will hurt more the younger guys who, you know, when it comes to the crunch, is Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster, are they going to be able to trust them? So again, like, that's not to kind of make a sweeping judgment, because like I said at the start, it's way too early to be judging, but I would just have concerns about kind of Leinster's emerging tier, that some of those guys are maybe not of the standards of other guys that we've seen in previous years, because we do spend so much time lauding Leinster's depth that, you know, I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, it's not always a kind of a perfect transition.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Keane. I've actually had some conversations about with some people who are close enough to the coaching staff, who put it that way, and that is a concern. The person that I was talking to feels like there's a big gap, and that people think they're better than they are. So yeah, like, it's interesting that you spotted that just from looking at the games, or from your kind of from being around the squad at scrum, you know, media scrums and watching games. So I think you know, I think sometimes, you know, particularly when you're younger, even look, just generally young people, we all know from our lives, you know, but sometimes you don't figure out how important some of the early opportunities are that you have, and you don't realize until it's too late that Jesus, I like, there's only 18 rounds of games here that I can play in. You know what I mean? So that opportunity there is actually seriously important to me. And hopefully there's not too many guys that kind of, you know, their careers kind of fizzle out because they don't realize how important these chances are. So it's a good spot by you, I think, and it's probably, you know, maybe a worry that's shared amongst people very close to the squad.
Yeah, certainly an interesting one to watch over the next few weeks and months. Just before you finish up on Leinster and touch on that Matthew Reinagh decision before the end of the show, I asked listeners to get in touch with questions again, and there was a good one in, a bit off topic, but on Leinster nonetheless, from Owen Hazen. And Keane, I'll go to you with it first. Who is the leader in the clubhouse now at hooker? You know, Ronan Kelleher returned at the weekend. Dan Sheehan, though, played in the summer against the All Blacks and was really, really good. What's your 1-2 order there now?
Dan Kelleher would be some hooker, all right?
Well, I know, combined.
You just put two together. It is a good question, to be fair, yeah. I would be of the opinion that, you know, the kind of old school approach that the man in possession of the jersey should keep hold of it. And I was really impressed with Dan Sheehan on the Ireland tour. We know how good Ronan Kelleher is, and I think it's going to be a massive part of, you know, Ireland's November into their Six Nations and the World Cup, that 1-2 punch that they have. I think Rob Herring did really well. He ended up scoring a try in the third test. But, you know, having Sheehan and Kelleher gives you something different. And I thought Sheehan came on massively on that tour. He's a really confident guy, if ever you get to speak to him. And he's just really assured. And I think he was one of the guys, I think, that would have grown massively from that tour. Because if we're being realistic, Ronan Kelleher, if he'd been fit, probably would have started the tour. Well, he would have started the tour as first choice hooker. So an absolutely invaluable experience. And I think personally, yeah, like obviously there's a lot of rugby to be played from now until then. But if we're talking about the Springboks game in early November, I think Dan Sheehan has done nothing wrong to lose that jersey. And I think that's a healthy kind of message to send out. I think too many times in the past under the previous regime, guys were just able to walk back into the team and take their jersey. So I haven't seen Dan Sheehan do anything wrong at all to say that he shouldn't start that game against the Springboks. That's just my opinion, but I'm a big fan of Ronan Kelleher as well.
Yeah, and he stepped in really well in the Six Nations as well after Ronan Kelleher picked up an injury also. So yeah, another one to watch. Just to finish up then, Luke, I teed up at the start of the show, Matthew Reinagh was the man of the moment last Thursday, New Zealand versus Australia, his decision to penalise Australia for time wasting at that last penalty in front of the post, giving New Zealand the scrum and eventually them scoring a try and winning the game. Caused a lot of controversy. Initially, there was a kind of a backlash against the decision, then the backlash against the backlash. And now I think I'm coming around to a backlash against the backlash to the backlash. But what's your thought on it? Was it the right decision, in your opinion? Should he have made the decision?
Which backlash would you like me to comment on? No, I think I think you know, on reflection, there was a few videos that kind of emerged of the interaction between Reinagh and Foley, and actually looks like he's made a really brave decision. And interestingly enough, I think, I'm not sure I've heard many people talk about this, but I actually think Foley is not 100% at fault either. I actually think the whole Aussie team went to sleep at that point. If you look at him, he looks like he's turning back to see whether his pack are lined up in case he misses touch a couple of times. Now, he is walking about like, look, it is his responsibility just to put the thing into touch. But I actually thought the whole Aussie team, the pack weren't ready to chase the kick. So, yeah, I'm not sure it's all the blame lies at his feet, but I actually thought it was a really brave decision. It was erratic. I think at the time I was disappointed because it's so rare you see something like that happen and you're kind of saying, well, look, where's the consistency? But if you look at the actual interaction, it looks like he turns off the clock and actually tells him, you know, you need to kick that. I think he's pretty clear on that. So I've probably come around to thinking that the referees actually made a really brave call in a massive moment. And I think the Aussies just fell asleep after, you know, what was a brilliant turnover. So, yeah, that's my view on reflection, Will. I think there's going to be lots of people that are calling for, you know, referees to be more consistent in that respect. And I actually think that's going to be a good thing, provided they actually do act upon it. So, one of the big things with rugby, I think, at the moment that I find very frustrating is all the time wasting, particularly at scrums is a big bugbear of mine at the moment. I think all the resets are taking way too long. So I think quickening up the game makes for a way better spectacle, you know. And if the teams are more tired, they make more defensive errors, and I think it opens up the game a bit. So yeah, I'm all for them speeding it up, and I think in that situation he was 100% right.
Yeah, Keane, we had a good chat of it off air. It was probably, we could just probably copy and paste that clip that we probably ran for 5 or 6 minutes just discussing it before Luke logged in. You know, my view on it is that I agree with Luke. Certainly a brave call. Technically, maybe was correct. You know, Bernard Foley did take his time over that kick, but at the same time, I've never seen that called. It's certainly in that kind of situation. You know, the amount of times you see, you know, Caterpillar rucks taking ages, the referee saying to use it, it's not used, and then he still doesn't blow it. And then like the interaction afterwards with Nick White when he was like in his face and he was like, you know, you didn't think I'd call it, now you know. Like, I don't know if Reynal was inserting himself into it or what. I just think still that it was the wrong call. And I actually don't think the time wasting was so egregious to deserve being called up. Like, I've watched it a couple of times myself.
Have you seen Andy Goode? Andy Goode is a good thing in his Twitter, Will. Have you seen Andy Goode's Twitter of the interaction?
Yeah, I saw it earlier. Like, and he is clear, but the clip Andy Goode shared is like the ref mic. Like, the idea that Foley can hear that as clearly as we can hear it in that clip, I don't think is correct. Like, we're getting the ref mic fed into our screens and into our audio. The idea that Bernard
but
Foley
he stops time to tell him.
He certainly tells him a few times. And Bernard Foley is, you know, is to blame ultimately, but I still don't think it was the right decision. I just don't think it's that ever called. And I don't think he's taking that much time. I actually don't. And I feel like right now at the start of the clip is like badgering him almost. Like, as in, you do get a little bit of a grace period when a penalty has been awarded to, you know, to set yourself, to look around, to kick the ball. I don't think it was as egregious as people are making it out to be. And that's why I think that right now is almost badgering him at the start of the clip when I'm like, well, hold on, Matthew. Like, the penalty's just been awarded. Like, things are a bit helter skelter here. I don't think it's ever given. So, and maybe if it was against the All Blacks, I wouldn't be as annoyed, but I don't know.
Hold your horses, Matthew. No, what I was going to say was, I think it was kind of telling. And to be fair, I'm definitely a hindsight on this, because when I was watching it at the time, I was just like, this is insane. Like, classic, you know, Matthew Reynal, like you said, Will, kind of inserting himself as the narrative. But I think the subsequent videos have come out, I've definitely come around. And even you can see a couple of the Australian players behind Bernard Foley, you know, telling him to kick it to touch, which to me kind of spoke volumes. They obviously knew, and they could hear, obviously, Reynal giving him the instruction. So I don't know how, like, it was obviously harsh at that stage of the game, but my gut would tell me that he knew what he was doing. He's been around a long time, Foley. But I thought, you know, in terms of the interaction after the game, Will, I thought it was really interesting that we got to hear that, because if anyone, any of the listeners ever have like a ref mic at the Aviva or whatever, the second the full-time whistle goes, they shut that off. And I was like, how are we hearing this? Because, like, to me, it just screamed like Reynal wanted, you know, to get his point across, and he's jabbing the finger in Nick White's, you know, chest and stuff. And I was like, this is just like absolute gold. Again, from a neutral's point of view, watching from afar, I just thought the chaos was just absolutely brilliant. But like, we never get to hear those interactions with referees and players before the match because the feed gets cut. So I just thought that really added to the drama, to be honest.
I'm just thinking, imagine if Ireland All Blacks, Jaco Piper makes that decision against Johnny Sexton. I can only imagine the reaction we would have had.
Jaco Piper's unsafe out there. Like, he's like, if I was a player, I'd be like, put like, have you got a bigger helmet? I need something to protect my head. Like, he just sees the game completely differently. Let's not get started on him. Jesus.
This should be used as a precedent going forward, because Luke is right. Time wasting is such a scourge in a game. Like, how many games do we see go to 100 minutes in terms of, like, you know, and the ball and play time isn't high enough either. So it's interesting, like, when World Rugby bring out these directives, usually for, you know, the first couple of months, like, the referees are really hot on whatever it is around the breakdown, scrums, lineouts. And then it kind of goes back to normal. But the fact that there was no kind of, well, as far as we know, no directive given.
Keane, do you think time wasting is a huge issue? Like, I know games are lasting a really long time, but for me, that's not because of time wasting. For me, it's because of TMO interventions that are taking like an age. I watch a lot of matches over the weekend. I would never be like, oh.
I think loads of teams do their best to slow it down. Like the Box, like Exeter, teams like that really want to slow the game down. They don't want it to be a fast paced game. And I do think it is an issue, to be honest.
I'm obviously just naive. Yeah. I just think everyone is injured.
You know what I think, Will? Do you know what really turned my mind? I went to a game with, I was actually with work, and we were, I was sitting with a lot of guys who don't watch rugby, and they could not believe it. It was a Six Nations game. I think it was Ireland, Scotland. Now, it's the start of the competition, so I was explaining to them, look, it's going to be a little bit messier today, but there was a lot of drop ball in it, and the scrums, like, honestly, you know, they were like, when's, are we actually going to watch any rugby here? Like, they were kind of, you know, footy fans, really, you know, where the ball doesn't play a lot. And I would argue there's probably not as many things to cheer at in a football game versus a rugby game. But I had to agree with them. Like, the scrums were a big issue. The amount of time, like 2 or 3 minutes before the games even restarted. And I think, yeah, like if we can speed it up, I think it just creates more opportunities for, you know, the players that the plays that you really want to see in the game, people breaking the line, breaking the defensive line, people scoring tries. I think that's what we want to see ultimately, I think, more of. Of course, we love the technical parts, but it just, I do think, you know, if there's parts of the games that we can speed up, we should be doing it.
A fair point. I was just thinking that I don't think it's particularly like incidents like that that is a reason games are going on so long. I think, as you mentioned, the scrums taking an age, TMO interventions taking an age. There's a whole host of reasons. But, you know, we'll see, as Keane mentioned, will this start this kind of like, you know, era of whistling teams for taking too long at penalties, at other kind of stoppages? That'll be interesting to see, because if it's not, then we can point back maybe and say that it was a particularly harsh call. But I suppose that'll only time will tell on that score. I'd like to thank Luke and Keane for joining me tonight. And thanks so much for listening as well. We'll be back next week with another podcast. In the meantime, you can review and rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. But until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.